You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
My beautiful people, where you at? Last episode, I talked about the acting skills of media personalities. And then Kristen Welker of NBC shows up over the weekend to demonstrate exactly what I was talking about. She puts on a performance for the ages. She's acting the whole interview to the point where she's hard to watch. A lot of times you can watch the media with no volume and clearly see who the propagandists are. Just look at the faces they make, or look at their eyes especially. Kristen Welker's eyes are about to bug out of her face. And they all do it when they're full of shit. Like Welker, AOC, Pelosi, Adam Schiff. If you didn't see it before, you will now. Every time. Her being so adversarial reminded me of Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes of Propaganda. Which disappoints me, because when I hear the 60 Minutes secondhand, it reminds me of my childhood. When I would come inside after playing football in the yard and mom was cooking dinner, and you can hear tick, 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 tick. You probably noticed I haven't had guests yet since my return to podcasting. I've started getting quite a few emails with requests for guests, and what I've told them is, I'll tell you what I tell them, which is please contact me after the first of the year. So if you have someone that you would like to be a guest or you'd like to be a guest yourself, hit me up around Christmas time and I'll start preparing after the first of the year to have guests. I just haven't been ready for that. I'll talk about that more in a second. We're here in Mexico now and we booked one of those all-inclusive hotels because one, I wanted to give my wife a break. And two, I had another procedure done week before last, which is my third, maybe my fourth this year, depending on how you look at it. Hence the wife needing a break. She's had to do probably 98% of what's needed around the house. And I anticipated the recovery from this most recent procedure to be miserable. I was miserable after the last few procedures. So I figured as long as I could survive a two-hour flight, that's all it is to go from Houston to Cancun, then I'd rather be miserable sitting on a beach with all the good food you could eat versus sitting in Houston, not even able to go for a walk. Plus some sun on the skin and taking a dip in the Gulf, that ain't never hurt anybody. So, in fact, it helps a lot. And then you come out of the water and there's a white Russian waiting for you on the little table next to your beach chair. Doesn't get better than that. Although I'm typically not a fan of the all-inclusive hotels, I prefer to stay in a walkable part of Mexico or an island where you get more of the local flavor. Because if you went to Jamaica and you only experienced sandals or an all-inclusive spot in Cancun, I think of that like when somebody who goes to China, but you only had a layover in Shanghai. And so you tell everybody, oh yeah, I've been to China. No, you've been to the airport. I had a layover once in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. And my buddy and I were scouring the web looking for something to do in the interim there while we waited for our flight. But there was nothing to do in Ethiopia. So I can't say I've been there. But in case you're considering doing an all-inclusive stay in this part of the world, let me tell you about our experience so far. We booked a place at a hotel called GR Solaris, which they should probably look into a name change because it needs to be called WT Solaris. Because holy house on wheels, it was not good. Not good. When we got there, they told us they only had a king bed, but we booked two beds. I have a daughter. And they said, I'm sorry, sir, it's based on availability. Okay, well, they should have said that when I booked. So I accepted that awful explanation and ordered a drink, an espresso martini. And it tasted like bad, dark coffee. I like to drink light coffee or medium, but never dark. And it didn't taste like it had any alcohol. Strike two. So we make our way to the room, and the elevators are broken. And our room is on the fourth floor. And remember, we have a three-year-old who has to navigate four flights of stairs with a backpack on and all the flair she wears. So not the end of the world, but still two strikes. Fouled that one off, let's say. Staying alive. We get to the room. I plug in my phone to charge it after a long day of travel, and it won't charge. So the wife goes to turn on the lights, thinking that it's the electricity. You know how sometimes you have to plug your card into the little slot for the electricity to work? That wasn't the problem. No, they had no electricity. So we call downstairs. They tell us someone's going to be up in a few minutes. They don't come. And then suddenly the lights come on, maybe after like 20 minutes. But they didn't come on in the bathroom. Meanwhile, my phone dies and therefore can't bring my flashlight in to use the bathroom. So we're beyond strike three, an hour into staying at this joint. So we put our swimsuits on. We're just going to go out by the pool. And we head downstairs. And you know what it reminded me of? Being around the pool. You know what everybody says about a Carnival cruise? That they've gotten so inexpensive that you're cruising around the Gulf captive on a ship with the type of people you would never voluntarily associate with? Would there be a worse vacation than taking Spirit Airlines to catch a Carnival cruise? Well, that's what this was. Scummy folk being drunk and loud, and you never saw anybody leave the swim-up bar, so you know they're just peeing in the pool all day. So I go back upstairs, literally upstairs, to the room because I wanted to take a shower. And guess what? No hot water. Plus, we had talked to the girls in the kids club. So one of the reasons I booked was because they had a kids club and you could leave your kid there for a few hours. And they weren't going to let our daughter stay. They wanted one of us to be there at all times to supervise. So I'm like, what is the freaking point? Well, they said she's not 4 years old. Her birthday is next month. Can you please make an exception? No, senor. Dude. So finally, I tell the wife, we got to get out of here. So I go down and ask for the manager or supervisor or jefe to you Latino listeners. And I tell him, I'm like, amigo, we don't like it here. We want to leave. So he asks what's wrong. And I run down the list from my memory palace. And they agreed to issue us a refund, thankfully, for the rest of the trip. So I went and booked somewhere else. And the next place we stayed, it was $50 more a night. But you cannot believe the difference $50 makes at an all-inclusive in the Yucatan. We stayed at a Hilton property, and it was 9 times better. That first afternoon by the pool, we were talking about how bad we felt for those who booked the GR Solaris and didn't know any better. I imagine all-inclusives are just like a cruise. Like, you kind of don't know what you're getting until you get on the boat or arrive at the hotel. Because the place we originally booked was listed as a 5-star, which it may have been in 1987. It also had a rating of 8.6. Did you know women are much more likely to leave a review online? And people are 10 times more motivated to leave a review when they have a negative experience versus a positive one? It's the reason I rarely check reviews. I do for hotels and Airbnbs, but I never do it for restaurants. I traveled with a friend one time who he wouldn't so much as get coffee somewhere without checking the reviews. And when you're traveling with someone and eating 3 meals a day with them, you can imagine how much waiting around I did, waiting for him to read all the reviews. But you know what they say, waiting in line is much less painful than it used to be. Thank you, smartphones. Have you been to Whataburger after 11 p.m. lately for the taquitos? that line doesn't move like Chick-fil-A. And you go late because you can't get breakfast till after 11 at night. This is something I learned back in high school. Back when nobody really cared that the party was over because it was time to go to Whataburger, which Texans call Whataburger, because in Texas, they'll insert a hard R into just about anything, even when it's not needed. Make sure you wash your hands before eating that taquito. But back to the hotel. So not only were the facilities much nicer at the second place, but the staff was friendlier. The drinks were better. They had a steak restaurant, an Italian restaurant, a better buffet. And the kids club, even though their stated policy was that your kid had to be 4 to stay there without supervision, they made an exception for us. Imagine that. They even had a little stand by one of the pools that made hamburgers and hot dogs all day. And that they were better than any baseball park I've been to. The food was so incredible. Funny story, that first afternoon, I was going to get the fam some food from this little hot dog stand. And a couple of Fruit Loops approached me and said, "I like your hat." And I was wearing a black hat with a USA flag on it. I bought it at Academy for $4.99. And I said, "Yeah, isn't it great?" And their faces were like, "What?" And I said, "Yeah, it's dark MAGA." It might have been my way of saying I'm straight. And they're looking at me sideways. So I had to explain Elon Musk sports a black USA hat or a dark MAGA hat. He calls it dark MAGA. And one of them looks at the other and says, "Oh, I'm a little slow processing information today. What about you?" he says to the other guy. And the other guy says, "Me too." No worries, guys. Skip along. You ever listen to Rogan, the Rogan episode with Theo Von? And Theo Von's the guest. And he asked Rogan if he ever lets a gay guy hit on him just to lift his spirits a little. And Joe Rogan is like, "What?" And Theo's laughing and he says, "Yeah, you know, sometimes around gay guys, you don't act so straight. So you let them hit on you just to make your day a little better." And Rogan says, "No." Yeah, I'm with Rogan on that. But this hat does look good on me. You know what's funny to me? Well, a lot of stuff's funny to me. You probably noticed. I tend to laugh at my own jokes quite a bit, which I actually think is a good thing. Unlike most people. Like, we've all heard that the guy who says, I mean, ever since we were kids, you've heard this, where they say, "You laugh at your own jokes," as if that's a bad thing. And I'm always like, "Yeah, I do laugh at my own jokes." "Don't you?" And they're like, "No." And I say, "Well, don't you wish you did?" And you realize that's something they haven't thought about. They're probably just parroting someone else they've heard condescend to some other joyous, happy fella, some happy soul out there who laughs at their own jokes. Maybe it's jealousy. I don't know. I can't imagine not wanting to laugh more and be more joyful. So yeah, count me as one of the weirdos who laughs at their own jokes. I hope I always do. I'm laughing now. But on the flip side, when people aren't making fun of me, sometimes I'll get a compliment, like the compliment on my USA hat. And I have to agree with them. Or sometimes I say it first because I know they're thinking it. Like, I can tell, by the way, sometimes, like, somebody I know, if they're looking at my mustache, so they know me, and maybe I haven't seen them in a couple months, and I'm sporting this sweet mustache now, and so I can see them looking at it, and I'll say, "My mustache looks so good that I'll have a hard time getting rid of it," and which, of course, evokes turd face, and they'll say something like, "Oh, you think it looks good?" Well, yeah, I'm just saying what you were going to say. Or if it's a good friend, I'll say it and they'll say, like, you know, I'll grab the outsides where the handlebars might soon be. And they'll go, "Oh, you think that looks good? Who told you that?" I'm like, "No, dude, it's a mustache." Does anybody ever grow a mustache because they think it looks good? I think of haircuts the same way. Like, I'll go get a haircut. And I take my girl with my little girl because she likes to get a lollipop. And as long as she sits quietly, she sits still on the barber's chair next to me, she gets a lollipop. So she likes to go and earn a lollipop. And when I come back, the wife will say, do you like your hair? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't even think of it that way. I don't get a haircut thinking it's going to look good. And even if it comes out looking real bad, I don't blame the barber because he doesn't have a great head of lettuce to work with. So I can't comment on whether my hair looks good. I get it cut because it gets out of hand. I start to grow a neck beard. There's really no other reason. I wouldn't spend $30 to $40 and sit there looking at myself for 20 minutes if I didn't feel like I had to. By the way, do we ever look any worse than we were sitting in the chair getting our hair cut? Is that because of the lighting? Or do we never, well, men especially, is it just that we never stare at ourselves in the mirror long enough to know why we didn't become a male model? I don't know. But if the conversation's good at the barber, I don't mind going to get a trim. But we know that's as unpredictable as knowing how your hair is going to turn out. So anyway, yeah, in this instance, I kid because I don't care. Though that's not to say all vanity is bad. And I'm talking to men here. You obviously should have good hygiene and eat right and exercise regularly. But a little vanity provides you with some energy. You just don't want to focus too much on how you look, or you might find yourself at a Mexican resort complimenting some straight guy on his $5 hat. I see these hats everywhere. It reminds me of this dude I used to take home from work. He had gotten in a car accident that was his fault, so he lost his license for 6 months. And he asked me for a ride home, and as I was dropping him off that first day, he says to me, "You know, you're a really good driver." What, dude? I have never been told that in my life. And I have never heard anyone say that to anyone else in my life. You obviously want something from me. And he did. He wanted to ride home for the next 6 months. So I don't want to think about what those guys at the hotel wanted from me. Last week, I was looking at a study related to happiness and social media usage. And it showed an interesting correlation. What it said is that posting on social media has more to do with unhappiness than does consuming social media. So posting on social media tends to make you more unhappy than just scrolling, which is interesting because I'm probably the opposite. Because over the past, say, year and a half, 2 years, I have hardly posted on social media, especially compared to the previous couple of years, because I've had a lot of days where I didn't feel well, like not even good enough to post on social media. So I realized I only post when I feel okay. And we've all heard that overuse of social media leads to unhappiness, the same way that studies used to tell us that watching too much TV leads to unhappiness. But what this particular study showed is that there's more correlation between frequency of posting on social media leading to unhappiness than there is unhappiness in consuming it. And the conclusion they came to was this. They said, those who post frequently are likely to keep logging back into the app to tally their likes and comments, which is what brings anxieties or a low mood. That, I guess, scrolling the apps wouldn't bring, which kind of makes sense. I mean, I could see it. Especially if you're unsatisfied with how much engagement your posts are getting, the issue, as I see it, is how does somebody become satisfied with the number of likes they get or followers or comments? I can tell you how, but I can assure you most people don't think this way because we live in a comparison culture. But if you run your own race, things are different. There was a young guy that used to be part of my coaching program. He lived in a small village in Europe. I don't remember how he found me. He was the first Euro I'd ever worked with. I don't have any currently, now that I think about it. So my Euros, where you at? Contact me. Let's get you aiming up. Although it makes sense I haven't had many Euro clients through the years. That continent over there isn't exactly known for its striving and self-development. I also don't work with many women, but I digress. When I first started working with this young fella, he was in his early 20s. And on our first call, he said it felt like he was talking to a celebrity. And he kind of treated me that way. He was a real sweet guy, high in conscientiousness, took copious notes when we talked, that kind of thing. But he acted as though I were somebody worthy of hanging on to every word. And by the way, I know you know better. I say as much stupid shit as the next podcaster. I know. But in my defense, you don't put your thoughts and conversations out into the world, a few hundred hours of you talking for public consumption, and not say some things that you wish you hadn't said, or at least realize that you'd say something differently if given another opportunity. But there are no takebacks in this biz. You remember Pardon the Interruption? Is that still on ESPN? PTI with Tony Kornheiser and Michael Wilbon? You remember at the end of that program, they would do a rundown of all the mistakes they made throughout the show. Well, it never fails. As soon as you're done, as soon as I publish something, whether it's something I've written or one of these podcasts, I'll catch something and something I said wrong. And what's crazy is that it's not when I'm going over the work, like reading an article again or re-listening to the podcast. No, it's always going for a walk or in the shower and something will just pop in my head that I got wrong. And it's the weirdest thing how that works. But saying the wrong thing or something you wish you hadn't said, I see that as the risk you take to help others. I also think about Roosevelt's Man in the Arena quote. You don't want to be one of those cold and timid souls who's always criticizing others. No, you want to throw yourself into a worthy cause. So at the end, you'll know the triumph of high achievement. But if not, even if you fail while daring greatly, I'm paraphrasing Roosevelt here, at least you won't be with the critics, which he calls those cold and timid souls, which will know neither victory nor defeat. We all know that famous quote. But back to my client. So one day he asked me how many people listen to the podcast. And I thought that's such an interesting question because, well, one, it's similar to someone asking you directly, how much money do you make? You know, you're kind of taken aback. I realize it's a different question, but I'm just telling you how it feels when you're asked. And my thought was, it's interesting that you're comfortable asking such a bold and direct question because I wouldn't ask you how much money you made if you weren't my client, obviously. So we had been working together for a couple of months by the time he asked me this. And, you know, we didn't know each other like that. So while I'm on the topic, sharing your income with friends is a great way to figure out who your true friends are. Because I was raised, as I'm sure you were, not to share that sort of thing. It was something you kept private, like political views used to be. Well, with the advent of the internet, people share a lot more than they used to. And some people have figured out that you're only benefiting your employer by not sharing that sort of information. But I realize many, if not most, cannot handle the truth. If they learn that they make less than you, then you know, they'll be really upset. So the reason your employer doesn't want you sharing your salary with your coworker isn't just because he's looking out for his bottom line. It could also create chaos among the overly emotional who can't handle that someone might make more than them. Because so many humans are prone to jealousy and envy, which, as the late, great Charlie Munger said, envy is a really stupid sin because it's the only one you can never possibly have any fun at. There's a lot of pain and no fun. So why would you want to get on that trolley, is what he said. So watch closely when you share good news with a so-called friend. If you sense any jealousy or they're not excited for you, they are not your friend and they should be phased out. Anyway, I've been working with this kid for a few months, and rather than tell him how many people listen to the podcast, I just made up a number. And one of the reasons I did is because I remember listening to a guy on AM radio that I really liked. And he used to say, like, he would joke with callers, or at least I'm pretty sure he was joking. He would say, "You're my 93rd listener." And I would think, I know he's joking, but I'd love to have a radio show where 93 people tuned in. And what if the real number is 9,300 or 93,000? And would he be any happier if the number were 93,000 instead of 9,300? How would you gauge what's good? What number would satisfy you? And that's how I think about likes and comments or followers on social media. I'd be willing to bet you'd be no happier if you had 50 likes or you had 500 likes. So I tell him I've got 53 listeners. And I kind of wanted to see what he'd say. Like, would he say, oh, that's cool? Or, you know, like maybe he's happy for me. Like 53 people take the time out of their day to tune in. Or maybe he says, do you plan to market the podcast to get your numbers up? Well, here's what he said. He goes, oh, okay. And would you believe that was the last time I ever spoke with him? I haven't heard from him since, which is so interesting to me. So I've only shared how many listeners there are with guests. So once they've been a guest, sometimes I'll text him and say, dude, you had this many listeners, and we'll get excited together. But it's hard to know like what's a good number. And yeah, so that's how I think about likes and comments. I mean, you gotta figure it out. You probably heard me say this before, but if you want more social media activity, you need to like their posts. Or what's better than liking or commenting on their posts is seeing them in person, which is why I've always said, if you want a lot of likes, move to a small town. Like the small town where I'm from, I remember being on MySpace and none of those people in the small town were on MySpace. And then when Facebook came around, they got on Facebook. And I was thinking, why would they get on Facebook when they see each other all the time? Like, to me, it seemed like Facebook was meant for people from the big city where you get scattered and some of your friends move away and take jobs in Silicon Valley or whatever. But this is a small town where people hardly move. Well, they get way more activity on their social media because my theory is because they see each other all the time. But where people get into trouble is comparing the amount of engagement they get on their social media posts to other people. And we all know comparison is the thief of joy. It doesn't matter to most that we live better than kings did just a few hundred years ago. If the next door neighbor just put a $200,000 pool in his backyard and he has a brand new Land Rover Defender in the driveway next to yours, which totally dwarfs your Corolla, making you feel like a high school kid, or when you see his teenage daughter drive by in a nicer car than yours, she drives by in a 2019 BMW SUV and honks the horn and waves the other way. I used to do that in high school when I'd see someone in the neighborhood that I didn't like. Like, there was this one dude, he lived three doors down and he was my kryptonite. You get it? But seriously, he would call the cops every time my parents went out of town. The prick. In case you have a kid in the car listening to this, maybe you give him earmuffs for a minute. We call that an old school trigger warning. Earmuffs. Old school. But yeah, this neighbor, if he would have just knocked on the door, Chase and I probably would have given him a solo cup gratis. And nobody got a free solo cup back then. But this guy was old. And by old, I mean he was about the age I am now. So, of course, if he'd come by, you know, we might have even held him up to do a keg stand while the whole party counted and cheered him on. But no, MF had to call the popos. And when the cops would pull up to the kegger, somebody would grab the tap and escape over the back fence. Because while kegs are cheap, the tap is not. And we couldn't risk losing the deposit on the tap. No way. We guarded that thing like it was Papa's ashes on the mantle. And then invariably the police would come inside and I'd get pissed, like, who was dumb enough to let the cops inside the house? And then I'd get singled out, 5-0, looking for D'Antonio, and into handcuffs I go. In part of my speech at Chase's wedding, I said that he had been with me every time I'd been asked to put my hands behind my back. We partied hard back then. Maybe I'll buy a cameo recording of LeBron saying, ain't no party like a Chase and Brad party. For those of you who don't know, that's what LeBron said about a Diddy party. Ain't no party like a Diddy party. And Cameo is the app where you can pay a C or D-list D-bag to record a personalized message. Like, hey, Johnny, this is Michael Ian Black here to wish you a very happy birthday. And people pay hundreds of dollars for that. So yeah, becoming satisfied with your like count would be no different than any other way you'd want to assess your life, which is to compare yourself to yourself. But let's just say for kicks, you're taking selfies in the bathroom and then you have a look and it didn't come out right. So you want to give yourself some grace and try again. A few dozen snaps, you're bound to get a good one, right? We're not limited by a roll of film anymore. You can take as many as you want. So you take your shirt off and you keep trying. You make sure you got the perfect angle and the right lighting. Maybe you make that dominant duck face that looks so good in pictures. I mean, is there anything hotter than a girl who looks like she's been stung in the mouth by a bee? When we were in Europe a few months ago, I could not believe how many euros had gone full Wanda from In Living Color. It is so gross to me. Why are chicks doing that? I mean, if you were playing Duck, Duck, Goose, it would be a while before you got to a goose. I envision Kenny Powers saying, or confronting the girl and saying, like, I guess we know who's goose. There's so many duck faces because the whole world is on Instagram now. So many young women sporting that permanent duck face. Now, here's an interesting question. Do you think there exists a girl in the world with permanent duck face who doesn't have Instagram? I'm sure she's somewhere, right? Probably hanging out with that disenfranchised fella who couldn't vote in this last election because he couldn't find an ID. In other words, no, those people don't exist. All right, let's finish with kids say the darndest thing. So after that first day at the beach, my wife was helping my daughter take a shower. And when they were done, my little one comes running out and she shouts to me, Daddy, I'm all clean. And I turned to my wife, because I know it was a tall task. I said, did you get all the sand out? And she says, I think so. She even had sand in her BH. So I had to spread the cheeks and scrub it real good. And my little girl goes, what do you mean spread the cheeks? You a little bit funky. Thank you, folks, for listening. I'll chat back at you soon. Thanks.